Right, it means he wanted to hear it, but he has a ton of work to do.
So I wanted to just talk a little bit about what makes the fast of Esther different from every other fast day. And it really is its own category. It's not like Yom Kippur that we have in the Torah. And it's not like the four fasts that we have surrounding the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It has its own quality to it. Of course, at the center of that, as the name is, it's about Esther. And Esther as a person. I think that if we think a little bit about her, which is what I want to do over the next little while, I think that we'll have something very important for ourselves, and especially this year. So, you know, what exactly do we know about Esther? Esther had a difficult life. Esther did not have parents. She was orphaned. She was raised, according to Chazal, she was actually married later on by Mordechai, but she had a very difficult life. Esther, as a young woman, found herself caught up in the middle of something which, you know, also speaks, without directly addressing it, but we can all read between the lines, to something that, you know, is one of the more painful aspects of what we've experienced these last number of months, is that you know, I guess when you're a child, they present it as like a beauty pageant. You know, when my children learn the story of what Ahasuerus was doing, so, you know, you can sanitize this to a degree, but we know that's not what was happening. This was a state-sponsored, orchestrated mass, you know, assault on anyone who was deemed to be qualified. It's one of the most, you know, again, I'm a pretty flexible person, but I would never, and this is not a criticism of any child in the community or anybody who maybe has a family member. I always, you know, said to my wife, we never, never, never have one of our sons dress up as Ahasuerus because of this. That what he did is just really one of the worst things in terms of, you know, just, you know, you can go to the ice cream store and, I guess to a point, you know, you could ask to sample different ice cream flavors, but we're talking about people, you know, and Esther was subjected to that. She wanted no part of it, but she didn't have a choice. There was no choice. So you're talking about a person who had experienced, you know, very, very significant challenges, not just by modern standards, by any standards. And then, you know, taking a person who, again, it wasn't like she, you know, asked to be a Yesoma. She asked to have this great challenge in life, and then she certainly didn't ask to be taken by Ahasuerus in, you know, the most brutal way possible. And then, you know, it's not just a one-time ordeal, but, you know, lucky winner, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, she has to stay there. And, the Gemara describes in great detail, which I don't have to elaborate on right now, but what that was like for her, you know, to be subjected to that on an ongoing basis. This was not a choice. And I just would add a further detail that she's enduring this with the knowledge that if she's not, you know, compliant, it's not like this is a person that has like a great degree of respect or a great track record for, you know, like say tolerance for marital disagreement. Right. You know, of course, the Megillah begins where it does to give us an insight into his relationship when he wanted to expose Vashti in a very graphic way at his party. And she was not interested, not because she was such a high-minded person, but because, you know, she didn't like the idea of him, you know, parading her. There was a power dynamic in their relationship. So she, you know, she's killed on the spot. So it's not like Esther, you know, is operating within the framework where she can expect that she's not interested in, you know, X, Y, or Z, that this is, she's living in a terrible environment. And this, of course, is all thrust upon her. All of it. Her being orphaned, her being taken from the life that she had been accustomed to, and then in an ongoing way for years. Again, the Megillah takes place over many, many years. It starts in the third year of the King Ahasuerus. Of course, the Haman, you know, comes to power 9 years later. We're talking about a very, very long time. You know, Esther had already been the queen at that point for 5 years. It wasn't like, you know, she had experienced a week of the unpleasantness of having to deal with Ahasuerus, and everything that meant for her. And Mordechai then tells her, as we all know, that this is your destiny. And before we go, you know, in terms of what she did, but just to, you know, think about that for a second. This is a person who, you know, I think we think, you know, she was the queen, so she had a good life. She had a very, very difficult life from the very beginning. An orphan, taken to the palace, subjected to conditions that nobody should ever have to be subjected to. And now this? It's not like, you know, she's, you know, had it easy up until now. But now this. And Esther has to ask herself, you know, what is going to be my response? And when we all know that, you know, she says that she's willing, totally willing to sacrifice herself for the Jewish people in this moment. There's the three most important words that we have to keep in mind for tomorrow is what Esther said, V'chasher avadati, avadati. And if it's the end, then it's the end. And she has every reason to believe that it's going to be the end. And I'll put that in two contexts. Number one, look what happened to the person who came before her. You know, Vashti didn't show up, and it's the end. This isn't like a person who has, like, you know, idea of loyalty. Second of all, Esther has not been called for the king in a very long time. And again, not being called to the king, that doesn't mean, like, you know, he didn't say, let's go watch Netflix. He maintained, again, without being too graphic, but the second chapter of the Megillah describes what his palace compound was like. He maintained multiple buildings filled with concubines. So it wasn't as if Esther, not being called for 30 days, it wasn't like Ahasuerus, you know, was just really busy on some kind of a business trip. You know, he was interested in other things. That was who he was. You know, people sometimes miss this detail, but, and again, I think in this way, probably we're a little bit of victims of just trying to escape what we're always taught. But, like, you know, I remember the earliest version of the story that I was taught is the king chooses Esther and puts the crown on her head and they have a big party. Well, that much is true. But the next verse in the Megillah says, great to see you, Steve.
I'm sorry, I got tied up with the mechanical.
Steve, you never have to apologize. We assume that whatever you are doing is not only important, but it's good for all of us. So, God bless you and welcome. So what does the next verse say? It wasn't like he settled on Esther and then said, I can't wait to really settle down. Finally, you know, she's going to make an honest man of me. The very next verse is that he gathered an entire new crop of women who uvikavetz bisulos shenis. Okay, that was the next thing that he did. It didn't end; it just kept on going and going. He just get more and more and more. And this is the environment. So it's not like she's thinking to herself.
She may have been relieved that it's been 30 days, and maybe it'll remind him of her. Been like, right, you know.
So,
I never thought of that until now.
It's a very complicated environment for her to be operating in. That's the nicest way to say it. And so she has every reason to believe that, like, this is not like a situation where she can go in and say, oh, yeah, he'll be thrilled to see me. This is a person who's, again, you can get a little bit of a sense why I don't want my kids dressing up as this person. This is not a role model for us in any way. And this isn't just somebody, you know, who likes to drink and is a little bit foolish. And this is a person, you know, who engages in things that we can't even begin to imagine, that scale of depravity. In any event, but she does it. And she does it because she feels that she's in a position where there's no guarantee, but she might be able to do something that's much larger than herself. And in that, of course, Esther becomes a figure for all of Jewish history. I think that this is the message every year, and even more so this year. We all have reasons, and Esther had more than her share, to say, look, it hasn't been easy for me. I don't need to go looking for trouble, as my grandmother used to say. It's one of her favorite expressions. Don't go looking for trouble. So, and that was, Esther didn't need to go looking for trouble. She didn't. She had our life. But she recognized that she was in a unique situation, and we owe everything to her. I think for all of us, you know, we have to ask ourselves in an honest way that, you know, what is something that I'm in a position to do that maybe somebody else isn't, maybe nobody else is. And to be, not in this case for myself, but to do something on behalf of something much larger than myself. And when a person takes that attitude, and when a person thinks about that on Tainus Esther, I think that that's really the essential message of the day, that sometimes for the benefit of, in this case, the Jewish people, we all have to do things that, you know, might not be anywhere near our first choice, and may actually be, v'chasher avadati, avadati, she was prepared to do something that was, you know, that she knew she could cost, you know, her life. And I think that this is something, you know, we all wish that we were never in a situation, that the Jewish people never needed this, but sacrifice is essential. President Lincoln said so meaningfully when they were dedicating the cemetery for the Union Army at Gettysburg. And he said something that I mentioned this morning to a father who recently lost his son in battle in Israel. So President Lincoln said, they gave their lives so that the nation might live. As they understood that it could very well be that they would not survive, but that if they weren't prepared to make that sacrifice, then the nation would not be able to survive, the Union would not be able to survive. And that, to me, is one of the holiest, most sacred things. We hope to live sacred lives by living, and we do that every single day. But the idea of sacrifice is such an important idea. And when people demonstrate that sacrifice, as Esther did, where she was prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice, that commands a very high level of respect. Because that is the essential act when somebody says, even though we're all, by our nature, our instinct is to look out for ourselves and to do what we can for ourselves, when a person makes a deliberate decision and says, but there's something more important in this case, and it's larger than myself. There's something great and noble about that. And Esther, in doing what she did, achieved that highest level of heroism for the Jewish people. She was an exceptionally courageous woman who had had a very difficult life, and yet she was able not to see herself as a victim, which would have been very easy. No parents, subjected to everything we discussed with Ahasuerus, victimized, but she saw herself as having agency to make this choice. And I think for all of us, that's something that we have to consider. Circumstances aren't always that dramatic. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. But to act in such a way that says, I'm not doing this for myself, but I'm doing this because I think that it's essential for something much larger, more important than myself, I think that is like the most noble thing that any of us can ever do. And tomorrow is a day, over the course of the fast day, to maybe reflect on that idea a little bit and to think, what are the ways in which, maybe at my own expense, but it would be, you know, the best thing in this particular situation for the group, for the people. You know, sometimes when we make those choices, we make that kind of a sacrifice in a way that it elevates us to a whole different level of existence. And so I don't use this word lightly. I personally live in awe of Esther. I think she's maybe the bravest person that we have, you know, in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, in those two sections of the Bible. And you look at her life and you look at every reason she had to just say, it's been hard enough. Let me think about myself a little bit. And she didn't. I think that's extraordinary. And the debt to her and the remembering her, thinking of her and thinking of her sacrifice, I think is an amazing thing. And I'll just conclude by noting, I probably won't end up being a king or queen one day. Definitely not the queen. Probably not the king.
Yeah.
So and we all have to translate this for ourselves in other ways. But I know people who live like this, who live sacrificially. What I mean by that is that they, day after day, it doesn't always have to be so dramatic, but day after day make these choices where it's not what they would want to do, but somebody really needs their help. But people who care for aging parents and in a specific, like, you know, I see that all the time. It's just like this dedication and sacrificial, but they see that as more important than their own personal enjoyment in many cases. Or there are so many ways of channeling this virtue of, you know, self-sacrifice. It doesn't always mean at the expense of one's life, though it can. It can sometimes just mean in general, because one recognizes that, you know, there's a need and a person's in a position to do it. I think when people reach that level in their lives, when they're thinking about other people first, it's a hard level to reach. But when people are doing that, that's, I think, the most meaningful way that a person can live in this world. And again, that takes on a million different forms. And I think I'll just conclude with this vignette, but I this is the way I try to validate things. I don't think it's necessarily natural. This two of our three boys really like sports. One couldn't care less. So the 6-year-old and the 2-year-old, and the 6-year-old, you know, when we play together, sometimes he feels correctly like the 2-year-old is slowing him down. And, you know, he's a very good brother, but, you know, sometimes, and that's normal. But I see what a struggle it is, you know, and he'll want to exclude him. And I'll say, are you thinking about your brother? Or are you thinking about yourself? And, you know, it's not a natural thing to do. It requires work. We have to work on that. He said, if you do that, you're going to exclude him. You know, how is that going to make him? So this, it's a most trivial example in the world. The Jewish people are not riding on whether or not my 6-year-old is inclusive of my 2-year-old in basketball. But it does prove the point.
It teaches him to think of others.
To think of others.
Huge.
That is the most important thing, because what I really want him to know long after, you know, these basketball days are over, what I really want him to understand is that we always have that choice. Do we thinking about ourselves, or are we thinking about how this is going to impact somebody else in ways large and small? And Esther, to me, is the height of that. She's the height of being able, v'chasher avadati avadati. Whatever happens to me, but there's something much bigger here. And the clarity to be able to see that when so much of our wiring teaches us to think of ourselves first, even in healthy ways, you know, we have to, at some level, be self-protective. But to be able to overcome that, to do what she did, like I say, to me, it's a story of awe, just that a person can achieve that. And, you know, her day, tomorrow's her day, you know, and I love that it has her name in it. And I love that the Megillah has her name on it, Esther. And I love the opportunity to think about her. So I guess from tomorrow through Sunday, now we have a little bit longer, to think about her and to think about this moment of trying to, you know, put ourselves a little bit behind and put the needs of others, especially in this time where there are so many communal and national needs. I think Esther is like the perfect role model for us to think more along those lines.
And she did, to your analogy of the 2 and 6-year-old, she did actually kind of need Mordechai. Her initial instinct was to think of herself a little bit, and then as soon as Mordechai pointed out to her, this is why you were brought here, she rose to the occasion.
I think it's like the proof of concept that it's just natural. Not that she was a bad person, but she thought, like, you know, what's going to happen to me? And then it's pointed out, and That's also another amazing thing, is that, you know, somebody who listens and somebody who is open
to
that.
Takes feedback and really...
Yeah.
It's so amazing because, you know, this one's a professor I had. I think do this. This doesn't need to go.